Welcome to New England Lacrosse Journal's Chasing the Goal podcast, the podcast for serious lacrosse players and their supporters to help further their development and navigate their way throughout their lacrosse careers. And now, here are your hosts, New England Lacrosse Journal's Kyle Devitt and Jack Piatelli.
Welcome to New England Lacrosse Journal's Chasing the Goal podcast. I'm your host, Kyle Devitt, along with Jack Piatelli. You're listening to part two of our discussion with ISL and club head coaches Justin Walker and Matt Rowley.
Matt, let's start with you.
How many times, we don't know specific names at all, how many times have you thought a kid or known in your heart coaching the kid that he's a D1 talent and he doesn't end up going D1 and you were right about him and the team that passed on him was wrong? Does that happen, and how many times has it? How frequent is it?
It does happen. I mean, I can think of instances for sure, but I don't think it's frequent. I mean, I don't know. You guys can answer that question, but there are instances that I can think of, but they're not. It's not every year. There's five kids in our club where I'm like, oh, what? Why aren't they taking this kid? It's not. I don't feel like that.
I would say for us in a 65 kid class, it's probably five kids a year where that happens, where I think they're D1 guys that don't go D1.
Okay.
But the follow-up to Kyle's question was, and then they proved that out at the Division III level.
Yeah.
Five,
six, maybe eight are misplaced, and it's like, God, why did I send him down there? He should be up there.
Wow.
That's what I would say.
Jack?
Well, my frustration sometimes is kids will end up at a place that you don't recommend. You say, listen, you know, you talk about Division I, you're talking top 20, talking bottom 20. You know, there's a great disparity. So I've had players go bottom D1. But they should have gone Division III or Division II and it would have had a better experience. So Division I is, I don't know if it's overrated or it's just the perception is, oh, got to play Division I. Well, you can't play at Hopkins. You can't play at North Carolina. So there's only a few options.
Yeah. Well, real quickly, I'm kind of stepping over. I want to make sure I qualify that last statement.
Sure.
Like, so the guys, the 5, 6, or 8 that go D3 and maybe should have gone D1, it doesn't mean I'm not psyched they're in D3.
Right.
They're all league players or starters. They're doing great. So do I regret their placement? Not in the least bit.
Right.
But do I think it validates that their wish list of the Ivy League schools and Patriot League schools was the appropriate wish list? They just went to the NESCAC and became 3-year starters. That's what I thought you meant by that. Like, if they have a D1-centric wish list, they go D3 and they have a great experience. We have 5, 6, or 8 of those a year. Like really good D3 experience.
Yeah, but I guess
makes you wonder, should they or shouldn't
they? The way that I would think about it is, would you be able to provide the same academic opportunities for those kids at the D1 level? Like, it's not just the playing. It's like, okay, well, look, any kid that's starting on an NESCAC team can play Division I somewhere.
Right. So we're right. Yeah.
But there's a difference between playing Division I somewhere and playing Division I at a place that can also meet the academic, social, lacrosse.
Yeah.
It's a very good point.
I want to bring up names now.
Yeah, I know.
Literally have a few names that I'd be like, well, would you term this kid? I'm not going to do it because.
Let me ask the follow up to that Jack kind of baited out. How many times do kids go to schools that you're like, you shouldn't have gone there? Like, I told you not to go there. You went there anyway. They don't listen. How many kids don't listen in a class average? One, two.
A couple.
Yeah.
I mean, 15.
It's not a negative.
For me, it's a lot, actually. Yeah. For me, it's pretty high. I think maybe a dozen. I'd say a fifth to a sixth of my class go to places I don't think they should have gone. And I'm pretty outspoken about it.
Because they're overreaching or not?
Usually it's an overreach.
Okay.
And I believe they just don't know better. And my finding is that the parents are too involved. It's what the parents want and not actually, you know, what's best for your own kid. And he's going to decide what's best for him.
Well, I'll say this too. I think 5 years ago when kids were getting recruited out of eighth grade, kids were going all over the place to places they shouldn't be going for any number of reasons. And that rule, I think, has really helped the kids to take a more mature and sort of nuanced look at where they're going to school rather than, I think I'd look really good in that helmet, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think that's solved a lot of those problems for us with that.
But I'll ask a question like, okay, so what happens if this kid does trade up? He does go to a better college because of lacrosse, has two mediocre years, and then quits. But he makes it 4 years, does really well academically. Is that a fail?
No, that's good.
You just described my
entire career. I don't think it's a fail. It's about the kid.
Yeah.
You know, what I think at the end of the day, the academic's got to be the most important piece.
Yep. Yeah.
And you got to go in there knowing that. Let's say you're going to Dartmouth or Yale, and you know you might be on the line of whether you're going to play or not. You got to go in knowing that. And if you don't play, you're going to come out of there with a Yale education, so you're going to be way ahead of everybody else.
Yeah.
That's how I look at it.
So I would only say if that's true, then I would dial back my numbers, because lumping in those dozen or 15 are some that went to great schools, had a great academic career, didn't make it lacrosse-wise. I was in that mathematical whatever. I wasn't counting those as successes. Because success really is getting through 4 years as a lacrosse player.
Yeah.
That has to be one of the boxes of...
I agree.
A lot of people go to college for 7 years.
Call doctors, Kyle.
Especially these days, right? Let's talk about the ISL, Kyle.
I was going to...
Come on, let's go, Justin.
You're a host, too. Why are you pushing me?
Well, Rivers is better than Nobles right now by one goal. I mean, let's get that out of the way. Well, interestingly enough, not in the New England Lacrosse Journal standings.
Oh,
rankings.
Well, I will say, I did not write the ISL rankings this week. Mm. I believe it's a staff post. I'm not going to throw anyone on the bus.
Well, you just did.
Yeah, I did.
I don't want to play Nobles again, so I'm not saying it's wrong, actually. I'm glad I had him when I did.
Yeah. So let's talk about the ISL. Everyone wants to talk about the playoff, even though we're not close to that yet. We just kind of are warming up, right? How has the league played out differently than what you thought it would? Like, which teams have surprised you? How has your team surprised you? And which results stick out for you?
So it's interesting because a lot of these teams we haven't seen in 3 years. So it's hard to even know. Like St. George's, for example, has, I think, been the consensus surprise of the league. But no one's really seen him play since, 2019. So it shouldn't be that shocking that we have no idea who they are and what
they're doing. It's like the Ivy League. No one knew how good they were.
It is, except that in the Ivy League, you get published recruiting breakdown. So you know who's at the school at the very least. Like, St. George's, I think the previous coach did a really good job under the cover of COVID of bringing together a really good team. And he's moved back to the college ranks. But clearly, he left behind some kids that could play. I don't think anyone knows what they're getting into with St. George's. It's kind of like a wild card. And we haven't seen Middlesex in that long either. It's hard to do that without knowing personnel. And you know, some of the kids that you did see were freshmen when you saw them last.
Well, and I think context is important there. You got to remember this last season, right? It was all over the place in terms of teams that played versus didn't play. There were like, what, four or five teams that played less than five games?
Middlesex, yeah.
There were a few teams that played six or seven or eight. And then there were like eight teams or seven teams that played a full season. Like, you played a full season, pretty much. I played a full season.
I think we got 13 games in last
my season. Yeah. It was the hardest season I've ever had. I had Belmont Hill twice. You three times? Twice?
Twice.
Sebs? Two or three times?
Yeah.
We were 5-7, but we had the tough... It was unbelievably challenging because you had to play the other teams that would play.
Yeah.
And we did these back-to-backs, which were nuts.
Friday and Saturday.
I mean, oh my, I kind of loved it. It was like Iron Man.
Yeah.
And I kind of really liked it in a way, but I also, like, it was.
How many of those were splits? Like, all of them?
No.
There weren't a lot of sweeps, were there? I remember there being several, like,
a couple. One, maybe.
Well, who did we?
How many were splits that shouldn't have been splits is probably the better question.
I don't know that it changed the outcomes that much.
No.
Not as many as you'd think.
I mean, I'm trying to remember. I think I could be wrong, but I think our only losses were Sebs and Belmont Hill last year. Am I wrong about that?
I don't know what your record was.
I think we were 11-2.
We didn't beat you,
and we played Sebs and Belmont Hill on the Friday Saturday, and lost to Belmont Hill by a goal, and then got pretty well handed a loss by Sebs. But I think we won all the rest of our games.
Question for you guys in regards to the season. Because you have the playoffs this year, are you coaching any differently? Or is the mentality any different going into each game? Are you maybe taking more chances or, you know, substituting differently?
Yes.
Because, you know, there's not as much at stake if you lose one or two games.
Well, it's interesting that you say that because I think the initial inclination was that there was a little more wiggle room. But then you look at what's going on in the league and you start to figure out who's in the top eight. You know, we're three games into it and we're only two games into it. And it gets a little nerve-wracking. It's like, all right, well, wait a second. You know, we might have been approaching things a little bit differently, but we still have to get to that top eight. And so while there's a little more space, you know, the old rule was if, you know, when we were just playing the league flat out like a English soccer table, you know, you win, you lose one, you got a chance, you lose two, your fate's in somebody else's hands, and you lose three and you're done. That's not the case anymore, but I actually don't know where the safe space is either in terms of like how much room do we have to finish in the top eight. So we're playing more kids, I think, than we've played in the past. I think we played 32 kids against Justin, and we played a lot of kids against Beaumont Hill and St. Sebastian's as well. So we are trying to like figure things out a little bit more and have a little more patience, I think, and we're building a little bit slower. There's less urgency to get everything in by the first game of the year, for right. sure. Where, you know, I've felt that we've had more time to sort of build up scheme-wise over the course of the year than we would have in previous years, for sure.
I also think that I'm trying to do that too, but the competitor in you kind of comes out as well. I'll go into a game with a game plan to play that sixth or seventh midi a lot on offense. Depending on how that game goes, I fall back into the same old me, and you know, and to a fault, and I'm working on that. But I also think with the point Matt makes about the eight teams and how good those eight teams are, I felt the same way. Like maybe I could be a little, you know, cushier and maybe get roll guys through and we'll still get away with that game. But a lot of those teams that you thought would be easy outs, they're not going to be easy outs. They're just not. Like there aren't many easy, they're not many easy outs, if any.
No, and especially because the league is just stacked with goalies, and a goalie can beat you on any given day. And there's
goalies and faceoff guys. Yeah.
Yeah, goalies. Yeah, tell me about
them. And you have one of them, Matt Tully, who actually played quite a game against St. Sibs. You beat him in overtime. Talk a little bit about that game.
The wild game, sort of a interesting statistical anomaly. I mean, if you just put the statistics in front of somebody, they'd say we probably lost by four or five. Matty played out of his. Matty made, I think, maybe one of the most incredible saves I've ever seen. I've got a screenshot of it of a kid winding up on an open net late in the fourth quarter when we're down one, and Matty comes out of nowhere to save the ball and allows us to go down and score the game tying goal. So and the other part is Matty played incredible against Beaumont Hill too. So he's off to a great start. And the Sebs game was, you know, unbelievable. I think they had 25 more possessions than we had.
You won one faceoff?
We won one faceoff.
And they won 25?
They won 25, yeah, something like that.
How do you win a game with winning one faceoff? That's unbelievable.
You got to clear the ball pretty well, and you got to be pretty efficient on offense, and you got to have a goalie that can make a lot of stops. And so, you know, we kind of had all those things, and I don't think it was quite as clean as we would have liked in some of that stuff. Matty played great. We didn't clear the ball quite as cleanly as we would have liked. But, you know, we were really inefficient on offense against Beaumont Hill, and we were very efficient against St. Sebastian's. Our shooting percentage was 20% higher against Sebs than it was against Beaumont Hill, and Sebs has a great goalie, so, you know, we did a good job.
3 years ago, no shot clock, you don't win that game.
No, probably not.
What's it like when you guys coach against each other? Is it weird?
No, I mean, at this point, I mean, our coaching battles go back to my time at Brewster Academy. I mean, we're talking a long time now. And being in the league, you know, you get some camaraderie and you build relationships with the guys who've been in the league a long time. And so it's not weird at all. I look forward to the days of when we're coaching, when I'm coaching against a guy I know, and we can talk about it afterwards and rehash and feel good about it. I mean, I was at Adam White's house for dinner on the night after the Sebs game. So it's like there's a real good base of relationships in the league, and it makes the league that much more fun.
Yeah, and I think we're all able to like coach very competitively in the game and then turn it right off afterward. And I think, well, the losses hang with us for sure. But in terms of the way we are with one another afterward, I think it's surprisingly cordial and deferential and respectful. But yeah, you know, I get it. I mean, during the game, we don't talk directly to one another per se. We kind of talk at each other through the refs and in our mannerisms and whatnot. But
Just talk about him to the refs.
Yeah, or that. Yeah. We get after it. It's a good competitive thing. And our assistants get riled up too. I mean, Nobles Rivers is a big, I don't think Nobles considers Rivers to be a rival, but at least Rivers Lacrosse considers Nobles Lacrosse to be a rival. That's one of the big ones for us.
The history of our games adds, I mean, we've had some wild, wild games.
No
I mean, every game, I told our kids before we played this year, like, this game's going to be weird. It's not going to play out the way it should. It never does. You know, the year that we won it in 2018, I think Justin was up 6 on us at halftime. And my kids looked shell-shocked. I mean, we kind of just needed to get through Rivers, and we were probably going to win the championship. And we were down 6, and we came back and won it. And then in what was the year that Sam Cleveland had 6 goals in the fourth quarter? 2016?
2016 was the senior year, so it would have been. But, yeah, there's always particularly streaky, wild games. Some of the other ISL games are a little bit more predictable in terms of how they're going to play out. You can kind of our games, I just tell the team, just buckle be ready up. For anything, buckle up, and just keep playing. Yeah.
New England Lacrosse Journal's Chasing the Goal will return after this message.
The Men's Lacrosse Championships, where speed and power meets precision and creativity. And they give it everything they got, from face-off to the final whistle. Go big for every goal. Go beyond your limits and enter the NCAA universe. The Men's Lacrosse Championships, May 28th through 30th at Rensselaer Field in East Hartford, Connecticut. Get your seats today at ncaa.com/mlacrosse.
Are you serious about playing your sport in college? Do you need a flexible education that allows you to maintain your practice and competition schedules while also preparing you to succeed at the next level? You should check out the University of Nebraska High School. UNHS is accredited and offers more than 100 online courses, including NCAA-approved courses to protect your academic eligibility. Students could earn a UNHS diploma or take a single course for transfer credit. Courses are college prep, self-paced, and available 24/7, 365. Enroll anytime and take up to a year to complete a course. Visit highschool.nebraska.edu today.
Looking to keep up with all the latest news and information on New England lacrosse? New England Lacrosse Journal and LaxJournal.com are the premier resources for information and inspiration on the New England lacrosse scene. Have every issue of New England Lacrosse Journal, the magazine, delivered to your home or office. And don't forget to stay in the game every day with a digital subscription to LaxJournal.com to receive daily digital lacrosse coverage on club lacrosse, college commits, prep and high school, Division I, II, and III colleges, showcases, rankings, and much more. Get in the game and behind the scenes now by logging on to LaxJournal.com. Just click on the subscribe button and start the subscription that is right for you today. New England Lacrosse Journal is a Siemens Media publication. Siemens Media. Inspiring. Informative. Insightful.
What can I do better covering the ISL and club stuff this season in the summer? What can I do better?
I mean, I think that it's pretty, you and I talked about it a little bit, Kyle. I mean, I don't think the ISL, I don't think we necessarily help ourselves that much with our coverage. But I've maintained that we've got one of the best leagues in the country. And I really believe that, top to bottom. I mean, I started coaching the league, after Justin, but there was a time when if you had a Division I player on your team, you were probably going to be in the conversation at the end of the year. And now everyone's got a couple of those guys. So the league has just gotten better and better and better. The level of coaching has just gotten better and better and better. And I think the league deserves great coverage. And I think that's not to say we're not getting great coverage. I think we deserve the coverage we're getting. And I think we could probably do a little bit better job helping you guys cover us. But you know, the more coverage, the better, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, stats and scores would be great.
Well, so there's that website, islsports.org, that very few people, it's surprising, like college coaches, very few of them know about it. And a lot of the general population, you know, but we have direct access to enter our stuff in. And then if it were to happen, it would be a ton of really, really helpful information. It has a scoring leader list all the way down to non-leaders.
But it's 2019 right now.
No, we fixed it. Got fixed. It's 22 now.
Is it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Was that like this
But
week?
The problem is, I think let's call it a challenge, as we're supposed to do in the, they're not problems, they're just challenges, is we are the ones that enter things, but no one really screens our work. So the varying levels of quality from the different coaches, and, you know, and we're all part of, I mean, I had my managers do it for the first couple games. I was in the middle of selling my company. And so I delegated it away and I went back and reviewed it. But one thing, not covering the ISL, but just covering lacrosse in general, what would be amazing is like statistical leader lists that you can actually reference and yep. know where they are, and you know that they're accurate.
Yep.
ISL has a foundation for that. We're just trying to get to the point where we do it consistently enough for it to be helpful.
Yeah, it's just like off the book. It's as someone that kind of, I just got into it. You know what I mean? I'm basically in my sophomore season covering it, and last year was probably the worst year ever to learn how to cover high school lacrosse in general, right? Probably the worst year ever, except for the year that no one played. So for me, it's information is power. Information that I can interpret is even better. Watching games is the best. That's also tough for several schools.
Well, come on down. I'll make sure you get a front row seat.
Yeah.
Happy to host you in Dedham at any time.
Yeah.
I think the level, how do I say this the right way? The level of play in the ISL, the level of boys lacrosse play, is somewhat inconsistent with the infrastructure in terms of its accessibility to the public.
Right.
The on a 1 to 10, the lacrosse is often a 9.5 or higher, and I think the league's accessibility to the public is, well, it's not above a 9, and so there's room for improvement there. And I think that, but that's not a you question. Yeah. That's not what you can do better.
Right.
I think the schools, can do better, and I think it requires, you know, some thought with the people at the top to think about just the presentation value of the whole thing. Because you're right. There are a lot of times when college coaches come to games and they don't know where the rosters are and they don't know where the barcode is and they don't know, and they don't have, you know, like stuff like that. And I can't tell you how many games I'm running around trying to find, you know, kind of like rosters or different things for to be accommodative to the video people and whatnot. And there's nothing wrong with that. That's my job. That's an oversight on my part. So as I say this, I'm sort of speaking in the mirror too. But it's on us, I think, to make it more accessible to you, so the games can be easier to ingest instead of just watching them, because the play speaks for itself.
Justin, you played at Tabor, went on to Denison. You were player of the year, I believe, right? Your senior year,
I was,
in the league. And Matt, you were champions at St. Mark's your senior year. You were undefeated.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny. I grew up in Brookline, and hockey was king. I played hockey and. Cross was around really back then, but when you mentioned the ISL, let's say in the early 80s, mid 80s, maybe even the 90s, it was all hockey. St. Sebastian, they talked about hockey. It was just great schools that had great hockey programs, mm-hmm. but top to bottom. Now with lacrosse, there's no better. I mean, there might be leagues that are just as competitive, but top to bottom. I mean, it's come a long way since you played at Tabor and you played at St. Mark's in terms of the competitive level from top to bottom. And now when you mention the St. Sebastians, the Rivers, the Nobles, they're talking about the lacrosse programs.
Right.
Where in years past, they might have been talking about one particular team, but now they're talking about the league. Would you agree with that?
Yeah,
I mean, I think so. I'm a person who grew up playing hockey, but I will profess to anyone that I don't know anything about hockey, so I can avoid all hockey related questions.
Did you play at St. Mark's hockey?
No. Like you said, those hockey teams were otherworldly. I think that hockey has taken this turn, and someone asked me about this the other day, and this is probably a whole nother podcast about how this backlog of kids is going to get sorted out in lacrosse. But with hockey and juniors, it's almost as if the high school has become secondary to their post-high school, pre-college experience and what happens there. And I'm again, speaking with about 5% of an understanding of what I'm talking about. But it feels like juniors has become a really big piece of that. And that, as a result, that sort of superseded a lot of what's happening in high school hockey. And lacrosse, you know, it's a direct line. Our kids aren't going to play junior lacrosse for 2 years. So, you know, I think that adds a little bit to the drama and the excitement. And we've got, I mean, the league's got great, great players at every school.
And that was my point.
Yeah.
You know, it's really come a long way. I mean, just there's a lot of good players, and they're all, you know, they want to go to the ISL school and play a competitive game every day and have a chance to win a championship.
That's one of the beautiful things about our sport is we all club guys, and I hope it stays this way, believe that our players should play high school lacrosse. None of us are trying to pull them anywhere else. I remember 10 years ago, I referenced it earlier when I bought the company from Birkwalker, my father, I said it would probably be 10 years before I sold this to some larger entity. I thought it'd probably be Nike or Reebok or Adidas, but now I think we're 10 years away from some form of junior lacrosse pulling guys out of high school, 5 to 10 years. And I really hope it doesn't happen. But we tend to generally, in my opinion, be about 10 years behind hockey, always, with every development, including reclassification in terms of PG. We kind of hang back several years to 10 years behind it. And I think hockey is often the canary in the coal mine with where we're headed. And that's my own personal thing. You can think about that and go in a lot of different directions with it. But
you can trace that to equipment.
Yeah, you could also talk about
trace. You could go in a lot of different directions with it, right?
You can talk about basketball. Why has it happened with basketball? I mean, I think that with lacrosse, there's a lot of high academic schools across the country that offer very good lacrosse programs and post-grad programs. You've got post-grad programs as well. And I hope it doesn't happen.
I hope it doesn't.
It's gonna ruin the game.
I just don't think there's enough money I can make it worth people's while. I mean, every kid that goes and plays juniors, whether he's going to Hamilton or to, you know, South Dakota to play hockey, is to some degree tied to the dream of playing professional hockey. And
correct.
As long as there's some, you know, understanding that professional lacrosse is great, but it's not an end game necessarily for most kids. I don't think we're not going to be selling that dream to kids to go play junior lacrosse for 2 years.
But I would cite the expansion of the Hill Academies and the IMGs and the Western Reserves and the Culvers and the more of those that pop up. There's one in this area. I don't know. This is in its idea phase, but it's been bought in a master's academy in, is it Hudson or Stowe? And it's going to be a sports specific academy. It's a father of one of my players. So even in our own backyard, there's a sports-specific place. You know what the logical next step is?
Is this breaking news? Your next coaching job is at some sports-specific academy to be?
I don't think three-step one. I think I need to talk that over with my new superiors. No, I don't have any plans of going to this particular place, but it's interesting. I think it's, from a business perspective, I think it's really smart because right now the ISL, again, probably a couple things here that are borderline controversial, but it almost has too much power. It's so hard to get into those places. There needs to be overflow something somewhere.
Right. Very, you know, I mean, yeah.
You know, like, so if somebody's thinking outside the box and thinking about a need, there is absolutely a need for that. And I just think that's, you know, it's a blurry line between sports-specific academies and juniors, some sort of sub-professional. It's murky because in juniors, are, you know, you go do, and I'm speaking now with 7% knowledge on the topic, you're usually doing community service or outward faith, you know, whereas at these sports-specific academies, you're doing academics. Some of them are quite strong, but that runs the gamut too, whereas ISL is academics first, no exceptions. And I think in a lot of ways, if you think about the ISL model, the student athlete model in the ISL, it prepares students more for like NESCAC and high division three lacrosse than it does D1. Everything about the practice duration, the timing of when you can play from this date to this date, you know what we basically copy? We copy the NESCAC. So when guys go to play D1, some of them are like, whoa, this is so different. I'm overwhelmed. I can't take my advanced English class because we have practice. This is blasphemy. This would never have been allowed at Nobles. But it's a lot, you know, so whereas what are the sports specific academies doing? The sport takes precedence. So then you're preparing them for D1 because It's kind of the same general model.
They're playing fall ball, all winter training, the whole nine yards, right? Exactly. When do you think price is going to affect the applications with the ISL? And you talked about, you know, IMG is like $75,000, $80,000 a year. So there's a price to pay, too.
Oh, God, yeah.
And right now, people are willing to pay that price for a better end result, at least they're hoping for.
Well, our schools are pretty good with financial aid, too. I'll give credit to the ISL schools. I'll give credit to Rivers. They tend to be pretty accommodating for those that do have the need. I mean, you need to have the need. But if you can prove that you have the need, they do provide it. So, but it is those people that are kind of in the middle that have money but don't have a lot of money. That's where it's going to get interesting.
Any comments on that, Matt?
The demand for the ISL schools, I think, is as high as it's ever been. I know that our admissions department at Nobles was overwhelmed this year with applicants. And, you know, our yield was really high and our acceptance rate was really low. So there's still a real demand for it. And I, to your point too, Jack, I think the athletics is a huge part of it, not just lacrosse, but across the board for a lot of our sports at Nobles. I mean, we're pretty competitive in just about everything. So that helps drive our application pool. But I feel like we're a long way from juniors. I still think there's so many other factors in play that make juniors a necessary evil or an opportunity for hockey that we just aren't going to see. The sports specific academies are a whole nother story. And I think those are hard programs to sustain. I really do. I mean, I think Brody does obviously an amazing job up there, but I think some of the other ones have been sort of ebbing and flowing for quite some time. So
I hope you're right. Yeah. That would be awesome because I don't want it to change from what it is now. Don't get me wrong. I want it to stay the way it is.
Guys, I wish we could have you in here for another hour. This was worth the wait. Thank you for coming in. But we got to wrap it up. So just want to say thanks again for you guys for coming in. Super awesome. Wish you both the best of luck in the ISL.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you for returning my texts and emails. I very much appreciate it.
Absolutely. And if you ever come to a Rivers game, I'll get you a roster.
Oh,
I promise.
I can't wait. That'll
maybe,
be great.
Maybe we could actually have you guys back in with another coach to talk about the playoffs and the playoffs about to start.
You know what I was going to ask, though? Who's calling the ISL championship? Because
I don't know that anyone is.
I would bet my car that has not been discussed yet.
You and me, let's do it.
All right, sounds good. I might not be able to get a word in, but I'll do it.
Jack's got a direct line to the most important coach in the league when it comes to all things playoffs. So,
Adam White,
that's the guy. He's the architect. He's the driving force. It wouldn't have happened. I mean, I know everyone said it, but it wouldn't have happened without.
It can't be overstated what he did.
Yeah,
unbelievable.
Only one person at this table has his novel, though, so it's fine. Thanks. We're cutting it off.
No. Quick answer. Is the playoff format going to be top seed hosts, or is it going to be one location for the tournament? Do we know yet?
Go.
Ask Adam White.
That was going to be Mike. Same thing I was going to say.
Oh, man. No idea.
One game at a time, Jack. Okay. Just trying to get there.
All right.
Hey, thanks for coming in, guys.
All right. Thanks for having us.
That was great.
Thanks again for listening to New England Lacrosse Journal's Chasing the Goal podcast. For Jack Piattelli, I'm Kyle Devitt. This podcast was produced by Steve Saffron, who is a wonderful human being.
We'll see you next time.
Who went to Rivers?
Yeah, there we go.
There we go.
Bang.
Kyle almost forgot.
Thanks again.
You've been listening to New England Lacrosse Journal's Chasing the Goal podcast. Be sure to subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Play Music, Spotify, TuneIn, Stitcher, and other podcast platforms. Also, listen to the podcast on the website, laxjournal.com. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at @NELaxJournal, Instagram at New England Lacrosse Journal, Lax Journal on Facebook, and our email address, chasingthegoal@laxjournal.com. Join us again next time as we go chasing the goal. Chasing the Goal, a Siemens Media podcast.